As Wendell alluded, our topic this morning is home. Our topic this evening will be home. In Genesis chapter 18, verse 18, it says, "Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord, and do justice and judgment." Abraham was chosen to be a blessing to the whole world. But his vocation was to begin, first of all, with being a blessing to his own home. He was called to teach his household, who in turn would pass on the truths to their descendants. Abraham's being a blessing to the whole world depended upon him first being a blessing to his family. For many of you, the single greatest and largest responsibility and the greatest impact on your lives will be your conduct in your home and your conduct with your family. Why, as we get a little older, our roles may change, our bodies get a little slower. We never quit being part of a home. You never quit being mom, dad, son, and daughter. In Exodus chapter 6, verse 14, he tells the Jewish men to be heads of their household. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, he tells the man to bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But it's a team effort, isn't it? Because Paul tells Titus to teach the younger women in Titus chapter 2, verse 5, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home. There simply is no more noble task in the scheme of the Lord than being a keeper of the home. And we need to understand that being a keeper of the home is not the same as being a keeper of the house. I believe keepers of the home will also be keepers of the house. But a house is not a home unless it contains food for the soul as well as food for the body. Being a homemaker and a housekeeper are not the same, are they? But the making of a home is a virtue. The nurturing of a family is a commandment for those who embark upon it. God gave his children, he gave the world, three great institutions. He gave us civil government to protect our lives. He gave us the church to protect our souls. And he gave us the home to protect our families. Of those three, which one did he give us first? He gave us the home, because civil government and church depend upon the home. Whatever else may be said about the home, it's the bottom line of life. It's the place where attitudes and convictions are hammered out. I believe it to be the single most influential force in our earthly existence. And therefore, it's the right topic for us to pause for a few moments and consider. Because, you see, the church can preach, and schools can teach, But the home must convert the sermons and the lessons into a way of life. A happy home, a godly home, is far more than a roof over our heads, isn't it? It's a foundation under our feet. And I don't believe any gauge can measure its ultimate impact on each of our lives. It's in the home, among family members, that we come to terms with life. Words can't express to you this morning how much family and home have meant to me. Aside from the Lord and the church, it gives me by far my deepest satisfaction. Because it's simply special. In Acts chapter 14, the last two verses, we find what we usually consider a rather nomadic man. We really don't know anything about his family. If he had a wife and children, we don't really know. But in Acts chapter 14, we have the man we call the Apostle Paul with Barnabas coming back from what is called their first missionary journey. A time when they were out, we would say, beating the bushes, establishing churches away from their comfort zones. And in verse 27 and 28 of Acts chapter 14, it says, "And when they were all come and had gathered to the church," they'd come home to Antioch, their home congregation, "they rehearsed all that God had done with them and how he had opened the door of faith unto the Gentiles, and there they abode a long time with the disciples." Here we have a rather nomadic apostle coming back to his home congregation, and it says, they rehearsed all of these things over and over. Why would a rather detached, nomadic preacher take so much of an effort to do this? Well, I think the answer is very, very simple. Because there's just no place like home. You don't have to take a very long trip. Come back and you smell the aroma, the scents of your home, the special feel of that pillow and mattress, which may not be as expensive as some you've been sleeping in motels, but there's just nothing like it, is there? I think I could line up 50 women, blindfold me, and let me smell each of their hair, and I could pick out Donna. Can't describe it to you, but I could pick it out. Why? And that's why, of all life's pressures, none is harder to bear than trouble at home. Financial pressure is tough, but it's not impossible to work through that. Physical pain is bad, but it's not hopeless. Loss of a job, failure at school, may depress, but those too do pass. But there is, however, nothing to compare with the lingering, agonizing, tortuous heartache of an unloving mate, a rebellious child, a broken home. Too big to spank, too immature to reason with, too volatile to threaten, too stubborn to change. Oftentimes in political campaigns, family values get blurred by all of the rhetoric. But yet they still are at the center of our society and the center of our church and our future. I'm so thankful for the good examples, many good examples we have setting before us, with us today, of godly fathers, godly mothers who take their roles of guiding the home seriously. But isn't it interesting when God chose words to describe his relationship with us, he chose words of the home. Father, parent,
child, children.
He chose those to describe his family. He chose them to describe our family. Now, the keeping of a home, the raising of a children, is not a biblical commandment. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 makes it very clear that singleness is appropriate. I don't believe it's a sin to be married and not have children as long as it's not for selfish reasons. But once we make the decision and once we choose to form a home and have a family, God does expect our entire effort in the doing of it right. Men have joked, and I find a little humor in it, that Genesis chapter 1, verse 28 is the only commandment God's ever given us that man has consistently kept, where God says, be fruitful and multiply. But we don't keep it, oftentimes because of our commitment to the Lord, we keep it because of the pull of the flesh. Man has kept that commandment physically, but not often emotionally or spiritually, and therefore many enter this world unloved, untrained, unwanted, through no fault of their own. I'm often asked, is raising children harder than before? Well, I don't know. I didn't do it 100 years ago. But it's certainly plenty hard. Sometimes it's the ultimate expenditure of self to perpetuate self. It's tiring, humbling, frustrating, expending, and yet, isn't it the most joyous effort most of us will ever undertake? An anonymous mother wrote the following. Someday when the kids are grown, things will be a lot different. There'll be no bikes in the driveway. No, the cars will actually fit in the garage, and I won't trip over toys every time I walk through the house. Someday the kitchen will actually be clean. The ice cube trays will actually have ice cubes in them, and there'll be something other than just milk in the refrigerator. Someday, she wrote, I'll have time to dress leisurely. The telephone will actually be available. I'll be able to once again see out of the car windows. Yes, someday things are going to be a lot different. And yet, one by one, they leave our care. And the house becomes quiet. It becomes calm. It becomes always clean. It becomes empty. Filled with memories. A little lonely. And we find ourselves thinking, maybe we can have the kids back over and get a little clutter in this place and noise. Oh, how quickly it passes. And yet how urgent the task. I'd like to take just a few moments now and talk to three groups that are represented here. And I do this because I don't want to focus just on one group, because we're all part of this very important subject. But I will talk for just a moment to the young people, then to the parents, and then to those of you that might be in the past parent, grandparent age. And I want in each one of these sections for us to consider the tasks that lie before us. And many of you are going to find yourself in more than one of these groupings. But what is the role of a Christian home? Well, I believe the role of the Christian home is essentially twofold. Number one, it's to provide a haven for spiritual growth for all of the family members. And number two, it's to prepare our children for God. The home is to be the chief school of human virtues. Now we have to ask ourselves, is that what we've got? Is that what you have? Is that what I have? Well, to the younger, I'd like to reflect back on a passage that Jesus gave us in Luke chapter 14, beginning with verse 28. And he says there, this is not a passage on family per se, but I think it applies. Which one of you, intending to build a tower, setteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he has the resources to finish it? It's a verse, it's a group of verses about thinking it through and counting the cost. Now, only a fool would consider building a house without having some kind of plan, at least in their mind, and most times it's on paper. To do so would end up with a dwelling that probably nobody would want to live in. And yet people continually and repeatedly attempt to build their homes and families without consulting the master architect, only to find themselves wondering what went wrong. Young people, just don't let that happen to you, would be my very blunt counsel. The failure to follow God's plan in all aspects of our life is disastrous, but the ramifications of failing to follow God's plan for the home and the family has far-reaching implications because it affects so many other people than just ourselves. It results in two people, at a minimum, under the same roof, working to build a home and a family from two different sets of plans and then wondering what went wrong when it doesn't work. Now, forgive me, but where is the logic in that question? And yet that's why couples so often end up in poorly built homes, crumbling marriages, communication gone awry, cracked foundations. Not the kind of home I'd want to live in, not the kind of home you would want to live in, and not the kind of home they want to live in. So what do? They dissolve the home. Choosing instead to follow the world and having their marriages and their homes plowed under, dissolved, totally disregarding the master architect's plan. Don't let anybody fool you, and some of you know this firsthand, but don't let anybody fool you. A broken home is painful, it's humiliating, and it's a nightmare. But that shouldn't surprise us because it's not God's plan. Malachi chapter 2, verse 16, God hates divorce. Young people, you will make two important decisions in your life. And I know most of you have heard me say this, but it's going to get said one more time. First, your decision to make the Lord your Savior. And second, who, if you choose to get married, who you marry. You make the right decision on those two things, and the rest of your life will fit together like a hand in a glove. You miss either one of those, and it will be a struggle. Doable, maybe, but a struggle. Now to the second group, parents, the home builders. A home, I believe, is a family being living together in close communion and harmony with God and one another. And we come back to that question again. Is that what you've built? One man described the Christian home that it was to be the master's workshop where the processes of character molding are subtly, lovingly, faithfully, and successfully carried out. Now there is a task. For many in poorly built homes, the solution is to buy more things, to have more children, to make them the glue that holds the home together. But it doesn't work. There's an interesting passage, and Wendell read one verse out of it, and he couldn't read all the verses on the home. I really appreciate what he did. But in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 through 33, Paul gives us the longest connected narrative on the home and the relationship. But he deals with it primarily in the relationship of the husband and wife, which I hope to deal with some this evening. But it's interesting to me in those 13 verses, Ephesians 5, 21 through 33, where he's talking about the home, he never once mentions children. It's not until we get to chapter 6. Why is that? Well, I have to speculate here just a little bit, but I believe one of the reasons is children are not to be the glue that holds the home together. It's the husband and wife's relationship that holds the home together. When children are the glue that holds the home together, when they leave the home, then disaster oftentimes intercedes, and we see divorces after 20, 30 years of marriage. In Proverbs chapter 24, verses 3 and 4, Solomon, tells us that a home can't be built on any physical things, but it says the bedrock of a home, and he gives us three elements: wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, there are no irreconcilable differences. There are only irreconcilable people. It's always amazed me how many parents are willing to die for their children, but they're not willing to live for them. They'd think nothing about running out in front of a car to push their child to the curb in safety, even if it cost them their life, but then won't do the basic things of life to give those children eternity. Back in Proverbs 24, when Solomon gives us those three elements, he also gives us three other words: build, establish, and fill. The word build there, back in Proverbs 24, means to restore so it flourishes. If your home has got some cracks in it, Solomon is telling us in the Hebrew, it can be restored if you'll restore it. He uses the word establish. It means to set in order, to place in an upright position. If it's a little tilted or even tip-topsy and turned over, it can be set upright. He uses the word filled, which means to be overflowing. Knowledge bringing fulfillment in each part of the home. The term wisdom, as Solomon uses there, stresses discernment. It's being able to see below the surface. It's parents being able to see when or hear when they ask their children, how did your day go? And the child says, okay. To be able to look below the okay and see if it's really okay or not. Sensing the needs and the ways of the child and the family. Wanting to be sensitive to them. That's what Solomon's trying to talk to us about in Proverbs 24. Is that you? One man wrote, the key to a good marriage or a good home is having your eyes wide open before the wedding and half closed after it. And don't we get that just backwards? We couldn't see a flaw in somebody when we were dating them if it was a Mack truck. And we don't miss any single little sliver of dust once we get married. Psalms 127 says, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. Amen. Home today is, I believe, Satan's great attack point. And its degeneration testifies to how successful Satan is right now. But let me move on or I won't. I'll undo Phil's good job of keeping us on time. To those of us that are you, us, I'm not sure where to put myself, are a little older, you have your children raised, maybe you have grandchildren. What a time to be a role model. What a time to be teachers in word and example. Because you see, children and grandchildren learn about the home and they learn about marriage from watching people like you. And that takes great discernment. How to help and how to be wise enough to back off and not help. One of the great tragedies in our society, I think, is the loss of the extended family. And we do suffer from it. Today, many times, families' communications don't go any deeper than emails or photos over the internet or long-distance telephone calls. And yes, ma'am, some of you have had to let your children go. And that was your parental role. The goal of a parent is to work yourself out of the job. The last few years of that aren't pleasant, but that's the role of a parent. But we can be there to counsel, to encourage, to teach. And when it's grandchildren, maybe even teach them on our knees. But it is a time of great adjustment for us, isn't it? But it is an arena of great strength for the church and the family. May you have the wisdom to fulfill that role, and may the rest of us have the wisdom to tap your wisdom. You know, the advancement of age does not automatically lift us from the ranks of the fool. It is often after the children are gone that the home crumbles. Cracks in the foundation we ignore for the sake of the children become gulfs of indifference in an empty nest. David was almost 50 years old when he had his tryst with Bathsheba. You would have thought he would have known better. But I guess there is some truth to the saying, there is no fool like an old fool. When you have an empty nest, it's a time of stress. It's a time of adjustment. And it's amazing how many homes crumble at that moment. Mates who've been taken for granted, where hot habit has replaced love. A man once instructed me when I was a teenager, and I didn't really appreciate it, but for some reason it stuck in my head. It said, when you choose your mate, find someone you can visit with as well as being sexually attracted to them, because you'll spend a lot more talking than you will in bed, a lot more time. Well, I would advise you to select someone you can are attracted to and can talk to. I wouldn't want you to get married with a feeling of yuck. But there is some wisdom to looking far past that, isn't it? When we look around our world, a lot of homes of the elderly are little more than fortresses of tolerance, staying together only because they don't believe in divorce or don't want to endure the embarrassment of separation. But that's not at all what the Lord envisions for the home. The home is to be a place of warmth, of love, where children, no matter what their age, will be drawn back to it. Not confined to it, but drawn back to it. To the warmth of the home that nurtured them. To wonderful memories of how the truths of the Holy Scriptures were shown to them in lessons they observed. Isn't that what you want your children to feel once they leave? We need more Eunices. We need more Loises. But the home and the family is an organism. It's a dynamic. It never changes. It always changes. Pardon. And we go through this progression, and I've kind of roughly followed it, of being a child and then a parent and then a grandparent or old person, whatever you want to be. And you find yourselves moving across what's sometimes called the PC scale. And the PC scale has nothing to do with computers. It has to do with the roles that we fill. When I was born, I was the child. And I was totally dependent upon my parents. It's interesting. Of all God's creation, the human being is the most helpless at birth. You know, a little colt, he's running around the field in a few hours. You know, takes us a few months to quit slobbering.
Sometimes a little more than that, I guess.
But that's the way we all start. But something interesting starts to happen, doesn't it? You move through life and it begins to turn. And some of you have a relationship with your parents now of equals. You're not dependent on them. They're not dependent on you. Maybe you're best friends. But you know, it just doesn't stop, does it? And if your parents live long enough, it ends up like that. Because Shakespeare was right. We're children twice and adults once. Right now, my dad's a child. My prayer for him is that he just goes to sleep. But I can remember when I depended on him for everything. Then I could remember when we were kind of equal. And I could remember the first few times he'd come and ask me for my advice about something. And I knew we were starting that slope. And most of you are in some relationship with a parent or a child, and you'll stick yourself somewhere on that scale. Some of you fit more than one place. Some of you still have children dependent on you and parents dependent upon you. But two truths always remain constant. The truths that I alluded to in Ephesians 6:4, to train our children, and in Ephesians 6:1, to honor our parents. I've searched for somebody else that captured this better, but I haven't found anyone that captured this moment in life better than Irma Bombeck. And I share it with you, some for the first time, others of you maybe again. When did I become the parent and my parent become the child? The transition comes so slowly, the changing of power, the shift of responsibility, the passing down of duty. When did it start? Was it the first year I had her over for Thanksgiving and I found myself roasting the turkey while my mother set the table? Was it the first time you rushed to grab their arm as they walked over the ice? Or when you first said, "Sit still if you want me to help you," or the first time they asked you to look over their checkbook, or when you first threw out your arm to protect them from the windshield when you had to stop suddenly. As your children are growing strong and independent, your own parents are becoming more childlike and dependent. It wasn't supposed to be this way. All the years you were bathed, dressed, fed, advised, disciplined, ordered, cared for, your every need anticipated. We wanted our turn to be in charge when we'd be in command, and now it's here. And now we're sad. You now bathe and dry the body that once cared for you. You feed the lips that once kissed your cuts and bruised and made them well. You comb the hair that once playfully cascaded over your face and made you laugh. You balance the checkbook that at once allowed you a happy childhood. You arrange the covers over the one who used to tuck you in. Their naps are now as frequent as yours used to be. They need the babysitter and the daily supervision. And then while riding with your teenager one day, they slam on the brakes and they throw out their arm to keep you from hitting the windshield. And all you can think is, "Dear Lord, so soon?" And the cycle of families played out once again, isn't it? You know, that doesn't occur simply in our physical families. I believe it also occurs in our spiritual families. Pardon me. There's great stress on the family and the home today. There's role confusion. What's mom's role? What's dad's role? There's shirking of responsibilities in every corner. There's the destruction, and I believe it's satanically induced, the destruction of key institutions. And that's why it makes it all the more important that we look to the Lord. That we stand fast. And that we protect this great institution that the Lord has given us. Called the home. Because without it, no nation can succeed. But far more importantly than that, without it, the church does not succeed. Some of you are just wonderful examples of what I've tried to talk about. Some of you are halfway through the process and you're wondering if you're going to survive it. Well, let me tell you, you will. And you'll probably look back on it with great fondness. Some of you are just starting, and I wish I could explain to you what lies ahead of you, but I can't, and if I could, you wouldn't really buy it. But when you encounter some of these things, maybe you'll remember a few things that somebody said one day that'll help you through it. It's a glorious journey. It's a wonderful journey. As we get a little older, and I'm going to put myself in that category, we do get a little more nostalgic. And I look out at some of you that have started your families, and you're just too young. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Tara. You ought to be scrambling around on the kitchen floor while your mom and dad and I study. And now there you are, a real jewel. And I've intentionally tried not to look over this way because I'm not talking to anyone. I'm talking to us. But every generation dreams that the next generation will do a slightly better job than they have done. And while we've got wonderful examples here today, it is my prayer that this generation will do a better job than mine. We're going to close and extend the gospel invitation. A home can't be built without the Lord. A house is built with hands, but homes are built with hearts. A house is built with hands, but your home has to be built with your heart. We're going to extend the gospel invitation. The Lord says He's our Father. This is an invitation about being His child. I didn't get to choose who my mom and dad were, and neither did you. But this is a time where you can choose who your father is. You sure can. And He's already said, I want you. Question now is, do you want the best dad that anybody could ever have? If you do, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.